We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Global Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
Back, time for another edition of the Carolina Insider, our first show of the month of February. Adam, the first day of February is Friday.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the
a February Friday, and Adam frankly is feeling fantastic.
Careful.
Adam, how are you?
I'm good. I'm ready for the trip to Louisville. Big game February.
It is a big game coming up tomorrow for the Tar Heels. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll recap the Georgia Tech matchup, Carolina getting a relatively comfortable 23-point win, a competitive first 20 minutes, and then the Tar Heels opened the second half with a fury and allowed them to get that big win. We'll talk about that. We have Tar Heel starter Garrison Brooks joining us today, and we mentioned on Tuesday's show, we had a lot of fun with Garrison, just a fun interview. And so I think you're going to enjoy that and get to know him a little bit. I feel like Garrison's a guy maybe Tar Heel fans don't know a ton about. And so I hope you learn a little something about Garrison coming up when we talk to him in just a bit. We had a big adventure in Atlanta. We'll talk about that some. We have a Roadhouse Challenge to set up and so much more, Adam.
I've got a how can you justify that?
Wow.
I've got a vacation from life.
Holy cow.
I don't want to spoil it, but I've got a list.
Wow.
Set aside the rest of your Friday. We'll be done. Yeah. In about 8 hours.
Yeah, no need to work today.
It's a big grit-sized pod.
Just hang with us. Let's start with the game against Georgia Tech, Adam, on Tuesday night in Atlanta. And to me, the biggest thing coming out of this game, one, Luke May did not have a very good game at all. He rebounded pretty well, had 9 rebounds, didn't shoot real well, turned it over 5 times, and more turnovers than points. And I think there was a time, even in this season, where if that had happened, that the Tar Heels would be in some trouble. But they weren't ever really in trouble in this game. And so I think that is noteworthy. And that's not to say Luke isn't important to what Carolina is doing. It is to say that the Tar Heels, I think, are maybe a little better equipped to handle him having a very poor game than maybe at times last year or earlier in this season. Secondly, I think Coby White is just taken. He's just at a different level than he was, and he's never been at a poor level this year. He's just, I mean, 19 points, 8 assists. And then finally, of course, you have the injury to Leaky Black on the bad side of things, where Leaky, with a left ankle injury, had a chance to talk to Coach Williams yesterday about it. No real hard timetable for his return. And I'd say that not to freak you out or to make you feel great. It's just the answer is unknown at this point. So some good, some bad, overall a big win.
Taking Leaky first, because that's what you have to do when you're the conductor of the train.
Yeah.
Choo-choo. But it's fair to say nothing's broken.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Which was a concern right at that moment that we saw him go down, because it looked like it was really, really, really bad. And instead, it's kind of, it's bad. Which is good.
Right.
Of course.
Relative terms.
Right. So that's good. Like, nothing structural, but... The bad part of that is it's one of those things where everybody's going to want to know, well, is he going to be back in 2 games, 4 games, 6 games? And there's not really going to be an answer. And part of it also is going to depend on him, which we don't know as well, like how much can he play with? And we talked in a previous pod, everybody's hurt.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Everybody hurts sometimes.
But we already know Leaky had been playing with some pain already. So we think his tolerance level is probably a little higher than, say, me. So maybe that'll be beneficial. We just don't know. Tar Heels have some experience with ankle issues. We've seen that over the course of Roy Williams being here, and this will just be another one to put in your file. Georgia Tech game. I don't feel like it's gotten enough attention that Carolina's made more three-pointers in these last 2 games than in any 2 consecutive games in history of basketball at North Carolina. 29 in the 2 games against Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech. So, of course they look good right now. They're making more three-pointers in these 2 games than they ever have ever. If you tell me, all right, in these particular 2 games, Carolina will make more threes than they ever have before, I will tell you, they will win both those games by blowouts. That's probably 30 years of history tells me that's probably not going to continue. Now, it might. This might be the greatest shooting team in history in Chapel Hill. I hope so. 30 years of history tells me that's going to even out. Hopefully not tomorrow.
Well, I agree with you to an extent. I do think it's hard to expect to make 15 three-pointers a game. However, I also think that the game of basketball is different over the last 30 years. And I think Villanova showed you last year that a team can win by being a primary outside shooting team. Now, that is against what Carolina has always believed in. That is against what Roy Williams firmly believes in. But Roy Williams, and we've said this before, does not get enough credit for this. He's not going – does Roy Williams want multiple big guys in the game and get you in foul trouble and rebound the basketball at a high level and get to the free throw line? Does he want to do all those things? Yes, that's the way he believes is the best – part of how he believes is the best way to win. But he's not going to just keep slamming his head against a brick wall if it doesn't make sense to do so. So this team, the way to win – and he said this in the – actually – in our pregame conversation before the Georgia Tech game, he talked about how he believes that this team is all about spacing, it's all about movement, and it's about shooting. And so can the Tar Heels make 15 three-pointers a game? Probably not. But I do think that you can expect them to take and make. We've already seen those numbers kind of bearing this out. Take and make more three-pointers and hopefully continue to be able to shoot them at a high rate when it matters the most.
You mentioned Villanova, and what made them so amazing was they did it for 6 games in a row.
Right.
Carolina's done it for 2. You'd have made it out of the first weekend.
And against one of those 2 teams, Georgia Tech, not a tournament team.
Now, that being said, I think the variable for this year's team that the previous 30 years didn't have is somebody you already mentioned, who is Coby White. Coby White is extremely good. And he can get his shot pretty much whenever he wants it. And most often it kind of feels like it's going in. And there aren't many Tar Heel teams that have had that in the way that he does it. The spacing thing, I think, is interesting because it's not just Coach Williams who's not fully familiar with that, but it's the players too. Like, there was one moment in the Georgia Tech game, I think it was in the second half because Carolina was in front of us, and you said Nasir Little kind of got caught in some traffic with Cam Johnson right in front of us as Nasir, it looked like, was kind of thinking about driving, but Cam Johnson was kind of headed over to the wing where he thought he maybe should be. And I think they both were right. Like, Cam Johnson was doing what he would normally do, and Nasir Little was doing what has worked for him so much in the last couple weeks. And so even though it is February, as we have correctly pointed out, I think this team's still kind of figuring out what works the best, and I think the teams that are the best in March just do what they do, and everyone knows exactly what to do, and everyone knows what everyone else is going to do, and Carolina's not there yet because they're doing it a little differently. Could they get there? Sure, I think so, especially if they could play Georgia Tech some more. But that's not going to happen.
Well, and so then I think it also gets to the point of if they have the game where they're 3 of 20 from 3, like they were when they played Louisville the first time.
Which, that will happen.
You know, can they do it? Can they find a way to win if they're shooting that way? And I don't know if we know that answer yet. They haven't been able to yet, but we also haven't seen many games like that yet, which is good. So, yeah, this is an interesting – the ceiling is really – no, it's really high for this team, I think. But there's also that potential, a higher potential for this team to have that one really stinker game that it's hard for them to get out, like the Texas A&M game last year in the tournament, that'll bump them out when you earlier than you may expect. If Carolina's playing well, they can beat anybody in the country. I believe that. And you saw it against Gonzaga, who I think is one of the better teams in the country. And Carolina won that game pretty handily. They can beat anybody, but they also are more prone to have a game where it's off. And if they find that game that's off, they got to figure out a way to win it when it gets to cutting time here later in the season.
Well, and we've seen two really big, essentially game-ending runs in the last two games where Carolina just scores a tsunami of points and the other team is just not capable of coming back. Now, again, when the other team is Georgia Tech, who can't shoot, that helps. But the fact that Carolina can score like that if they need to is encouraging, and I do think it tells you something that Carolina's only played 4 ACC road games, and they've won 2 by more than 20 points. Yeah. Now, that was Pitt and Georgia Tech, I get it, but only 4 times in the last 25 years has Carolina won 2 ACC road games by more than 20 points.
I don't care who you're playing. It's not easy to do.
So the league's bigger, so it's easier to do, and you play one more road game than maybe you used to. But still, it's hard to beat an ACC team by 20 points on the road. It doesn't matter who it is. It's hard to beat them. And so while it says something about the league, I also think it says something about Carolina offensively and the potential to put a whole lot of points on the board. And we talked before the season even started, I think before there had even been an exhibition game, could Carolina play faster this year? And Georgia Tech kind of thrives on they're going to play their weirdo zones and make you all confused, and you're not going to make shots, and they're not either, and eventually you'll just give up because you're mad. And Carolina didn't do that. The Tar Heels kept playing fast, even against a Georgia Tech team intent on slowing you down, and I think that's a good sign tempo-wise, because when Roy Williams teams are best, they just run right past you, and that's been what's happened the last week or two.
One other where I mentioned Luke May. It seems like at the moment – Luke May and Kenny Williams, they're just in a little bit of a funk handling the basketball. Not necessarily their entire game, but I think they had 9 turnovers, maybe 8 between the two of them in the game against Georgia Tech. And we know turnovers have been a problem this year for Carolina. They need those guys to hang on to the ball better.
Yeah, and I don't know why. Like, Kenny Williams threw it away twice almost in a row, just kind of trying to throw it in the middle to the free throw line of the Georgia Tech zone, and the Georgia Tech defender just jumped up and caught it.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't a hard pass. And some of Luke May's passes that just kind of sail out of bounds, I don't know why that happens. I truly don't know why. But I think that you need to count on that happening because it has happened for half the year.
Well, and we talked about this, Eric and I did, and you were sitting with us in Atlanta, and we had mentioned, I think, off the air before we mentioned it on the air, that it feels like we've said so many times this year, boy, this Carolina offense is playing really well when it holds on to the ball. And I think at this point, that's kind of who the Tar Heels are, that when they aren't turning it over, for the most part, they're really good offensively, but they also are prone to turn it over. And so, Luke's, it feels like a lot of Luke's comes when he's trying to do something in the post. And I'll be interested to see how that continues to evolve, because I think one of his best games of the year to me was Virginia Tech, but he was outside a lot more in that game. Even the NC State game were probably one of his better games of the year, and I may be misremembering this, but I feel like he was outside a little bit more in that game and not sitting there and trying to pivot through double teams. And because when that happens, that isn't when he is the most effective. So talking about spacing of the floor, just be interested to see how that evolves here over the final month of the regular season.
Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that there's a correlation to Nasir Little there. When Luke May is under the basket, Nasir Little's probably not as good. And when Luke May's free throw line are above, Nasir Little will do whatever he wants to do to the guy guarding him, pretty much no matter who it is. So I think as Carolina maybe uses that more to try to create some scoring for Little, who's been really efficient doing that, maybe you see May's turnovers go down because he's not having to do the things that are leading to the turnovers. There's a big difference in I throw the ball four rows up in the stands and then my team gets to go down and set up on defense versus I try to throw a bounce pass to the wing, they steal it and go down and dunk it.
Yeah.
If you're going to turn it over, just turn it the heck over. Turn it way over.
Fully commit to the turnover.
Yes. Then let them throw the ball inbounds and take your chances playing defense. But the live ball turnovers are painful.
Anything else from the game itself, Adam?
No.
All right, let's look ahead to Louisville.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
B-Rob was really good.
Yes, he was.
Back at home. I always like that.
Another very solid performance from him off the bench and we've said this, I think, he's just kind of – I think one big difference now, even compared to earlier in the year, is he's just going out there and playing within the game. And if he has an open shot, he's going to take it. But if somebody has a better shot, he's going to pass it to that guy. And he's going to – Carolina put him on Alvarado, the point guard, some defensively because Brandon has longer arms and can be a disruptive force in that way. And I think he's gotten better – and you may have talked to him about this after the game – about not kind of getting his hands down because he in his career at times he's picked up kind of cheap little hand check fouls just because he put his hands kind of down in front of his body instead of out. And so he would pick up little silly fouls that way. He just comes in and kind of plays within the game and makes a couple of key shots and does some nice things. And we even talked, Virginia Tech, he didn't score, but he drew a big charge. And this game, he did score. He hit a couple of shots and hit a big three. And he's just giving you something good, it feels like, every time.
I love that pass he threw to Little for the dunk where he kind of threw it back over his head. Because I think 2 months ago, Brandon Robinson would have probably tried to figure out how to get that ball to the rim and shoot it somehow or another because he was in transition and it feels like a time you should shoot, so that's what he would have done. And you're right, he talked about how Coach Robinson is always talking to him about dropping his hands and telling him instead just spread your hands out, use your wingspan because it's really long. And he said that's what he did against Alvarado on that play in the second half, and you mentioned it on the air where he did a good job. Alvarado is going to take you to the basket no matter what, and Alvarado had decided that's what he was going to do, and Robinson wouldn't let him. And that's a pretty tough player to defend.
Yeah.
And he said that's what he was doing on that play. And I think that's, you talk about players getting older and more mature and stuff. That's when you see it, when they hear what the coaches are telling them and then can figure out how to do it, even if that's not what comes naturally to them. And that's what he's starting to do.
I was going to say that. I do think he, Brandon Robinson, needs to get a lot of credit, too, for just being – I think he's just – gotten more mature, because I think there have been times where he's probably been frustrated with what his role's been, and now he is kind of embracing that and he's thriving in it and getting more minutes because of it. So he's a big part of what Carolina does.
I thought,
because when you're bringing him and Little off the bench, I mean, those are two really good players to be bringing something to your team when those are your top two guys coming into the game off the bench.
Well, and look at what Carolina's opponents have brought in off the bench
right.
to this point in the season. Again, the schedule's going to get tougher. But to this point in the season, teams aren't bringing guys off the bench who can do what those two can do. So, big plus. Another guy who I thought was quietly pretty good was Seventh Woods in the first half defensively.
Yeah.
And I know it probably feels like we're just trying to pump up Seventh Woods or something, but that's the last two games where in the first half he's had some big defensive plays. Maybe that's all you need from him. And that's what he gave you.
Take care of the ball, play good defense. That's all Carolina needs from Seventh Woods.
Well, and you know, if you're opposing point guard guy and Coby White goes out of the game, you're like, whew, thank goodness, I can take a little break. Well, then Seventh Woods comes in and harasses you and, yep. and creates turnovers, and you're like, geez, come on. So I think he's got a little advantage in that I think there's going to be a natural response from opponents to kind of take a big breath. He can capitalize on that.
Carolina had some kind of vicious dunks in that game.
Yeah.
His was underrated vicious.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
It was like he just jumped fast. Like, the velocity at which he went towards the rim was high.
Yeah. It was almost like – I almost kind of thought like it was like he was floating, and then it was like – it's like somebody did a video where they had it in slow motion
yeah.
and then sped it back up to normal speed, and he dunked it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Me too. Because
I can't do it at all. Okay, Louisville. This is a big game for Carolina for multiple reasons. One – Louisville just absolutely whipped the Tar Heels the first time they played, 21-point win in the Smith Center, and Carolina just was, I think some of that performance was the Tar Heels and some of that was Louisville made Carolina look that way. And so the Heels will certainly want to put a better performance on there against this team. I think Louisville has kind of, I don't know if surprisingly is the right word, but maybe so. I mean, I think they're really good. And I think there was some unknown on what that team was going to be like this year with the transition and all the stuff that they have and are still dealing with off the court and just exactly what they were going to be like. And they have really seemed to buy into what Chris Mack is doing. And they're a physical team, a big team, and big at every position. I mean, they're, you know, 6'5", 6'6". And I think Carolina's actually kind of – Carolina doesn't have the seven-footers, but I think on the wing Carolina's pretty big, and so is Louisville. But then Louisville's also really big inside. And so that size, I think, is going to be something to keep an eye on because I thought the most important player in the – well, two guys. Enoch just killed Carolina down low in the first game. And then on the wing, Sutton – was so good in the game, almost had a I mean, kind of quietly, almost had a triple-double in the game in Chapel Hill. And so two teams that I'm going to guess both feel like they are better now than they were five games ago when they played each other. That place is going to be rocking because, Adam, I've noticed just since Louisville entered the league, they seem to really dislike Carolina.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why, but they seem to – they seem to really get fired up for the Tar Heels, which is fine. That's great. But the Louisville fans really seem to have something against Carolina, which is, again, fine. But it'll be a difficult environment to go into, a tough matchup, I think, for this Carolina team, and important for them to show that I think they were better than what they put out there on tape 5 weeks or 5 games ago.
Louisville kind of reminds me of, like, Florida State 2.0. Like, that, you put Florida State in the upgrade machine and turn the laser on, and out comes Louisville.
Yeah.
A little more skilled, a little more savvy. Chris Mack's a really good coach. So they're tough. We just talked about the turnovers. They're forcing opponents into the second highest turnover rate in the league. Carolina's got to take care of the ball. Louisville's one who, if you turn it over live ball, they're going to go down and score. The one thing about them that they did pretty well here was they got to the line a lot, and they haven't been doing that as much in AAC play. It's kind of weird their splits because in non-conference, they were one of the best in the country at getting to the line. And in conference games, they're like in the middle of the league and getting to the line. So something has changed with either how teams are defending them or how aggressive they are, and we'll see if Carolina is able to take advantage of that because we know Carolina can get in some foul trouble every now and then. You need Coby White to stay in the game. They're probably going to drive the ball at you, and somehow he's got to not foul.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Yes, he only played 19 minutes in the first game, did not have a field goal, was in foul trouble early, and as we talked about after that game, well, I thought that was a big part of it. Kobe White, there just aren't many guys like Kobe White. And so he is, I think you said this at the beginning of the year, he and Nasir Little are just give Carolina something that a lot of teams do, that most teams don't have. And they need those guys available to play. And so hopefully that will be the case. You know, also, because of the way the schedule is backloaded in the league, I mean, Louisville hasn't played Duke. They haven't played Virginia. I don't think they've played Virginia Tech. They hadn't played NC State. Hadn't played
They beat NC State.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did play NC State, one at home.
Close.
Close, yeah. And the same can be said for the Tar Heels. I mean, Tar Heels still have to play Virginia. They still have to play Duke twice. They play State again. They haven't played Syracuse yet. Haven't played Florida State yet. So, I mean, all these teams are going to see each other here over the next couple of weeks. And this is the first of those really big matchups where it's almost at least once a week and sometimes twice a week. From this point forward, you're playing one of the other teams that are in the top eight. Because there's starting to be some separation to me from the top eight and the bottom eight in the league. You've got Carolina, Duke, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Louisville, NC State, Florida State, Syracuse. I think those eight teams are better than the other eight teams in the league. And maybe I missed one or messed somebody up, but I think that's the case. And so those top eight teams are going to start playing each other a bunch here in the next couple of weeks. And so these are meaningful games.
Yeah, I think whoever wins tomorrow's game is going to feel pretty good about they're in that top four to five of the league. And whoever loses is going to feel like, all right, we got to go beat some of those other teams you just mentioned in order to work our way up into there. Because if you're in the top half of those eight, you feel pretty good about you're going to get a favorable NCAA tournament seeding. You're probably one of the best 15 to 20 teams in the country. If you're in the bottom half of those eight, you're going somewhere for the tournament you probably don't want to go with a team in your bracket that you don't want, far away from home, just because of the math. And that's not where you want to be.
So big game coming up, 2 o'clock. We'll be on the air at 1 p.m.
So much better than 8 or 6.
Yeah, I know. I was a little surprised it wasn't the game day game. I think this might be the best game this weekend. Virginia Tech, NC State's a ranked matchup, but I think there's both these teams are, I think this is a more attractive matchup. The game day game is Indiana, who has fallen apart, at Michigan State, who just had one of their best players be out for the rest of the year. Duke is the team in the league who doesn't have a league game this week, but they're doing their annual dance with St. John's, which suddenly has become a lot harder. But that's in Durham. This weekend.
Of course. Right? Come on.
Well, it's either in Durham or Madison Square Garden. So they play this weekend against St. John's. I'm trying to think. Virginia Tech, NC State is probably the other biggest conference game, and that is a noon game, I think, on Saturday, tomorrow. So should be a good weekend and a big game for the Tar Heels, to be sure. Adam, anything else about that one before we hit our Garrison Brooks interview?
No.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to our interview with Garrison Brooks. We'll talk a little bit about it when we come back out. But here is Tar Heels sophomore big man, Garrison Brooks.
I don't want to intimidate anyone else, but our next guest has already taken the greatest arms cross picture
that was big time
that's ever been done.
No, it was big time. He set the bar really high for us now.
So everyone else who was thinking about doing it, you might want to talk to Garrison Brooks so he can tell you how to do it the right way.
Yeah.
Garrison, where did you learn how to take such incredible arms cross serious face pictures?
See, I did a lot of picture taking when I was younger in ninth grade. Me and my friends used to take a lot of pictures, like before class, like in walking to class. So, just something I learned.
Are there surviving pictures of those?
Can we get some like 14-year-old Garrison Brooks pictures out there?
I got one. I know I got one for sure. It's at an Auburn football game, so I know I got one for sure. Then
nice. Tell us a little bit about the season to this point, just how you feel like you're doing individually, about the team in general, just kind of your thoughts about where you guys are right now, a couple games into conference play.
Personally, right now, I feel really good about the team. I mean, I feel like we're getting better with every game. I feel like we had one really bad game. I mean, it was just a kind of really bad taste in our mouths for the Louisville game. But I feel like ever since then, like, we've been getting better every day in practice. Our attention to detail has been great. So, I personally, I feel really good about us right now.
How about yourself? How about individually?
Personally, I feel like I've been getting better since game one. I mean, I'm learning a lot of things, like, just as much as last year. But, I mean, it's not hitting me as fast. So, I mean, I feel like the biggest thing is just getting better game by game.
Coach Williams always brags on how good you are defensively. What do you do so well defensively, and how have you learned how to do that?
So, essentially, in, like, high school, like, we used to do shell drill a lot, learning about, like, rotations. So, that was one of the biggest things I had to learn in high school. I mean, I feel like it's been really key for me here because, like, I can move when the ball moves. Like, I see the ball all the time. So, I mean, it helps. So, I credit my high school coach for implanting that in me. And just Coach Williams, like, he really emphasizes defense. And if you want to play, that's one of the biggest things for him. So, that's what I kind of try to do.
How is year two Garrison Brooks different than year one Garrison Brooks in your mind?
Year one Garrison Brooks, I wasn't very confident, pretty weak, didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, you can see, you saw that in like the first three ACC games last year. I didn't know what was going on. But I feel like this year I'm more confident. I kind of know what's going on. I mean, that's pretty much the biggest thing for me, just being more confident.
How does that, in your mind, how does that confidence kind of show up on the court right now, in your opinion?
I mean, when it shows up on the court with me, is just, like, just going out there playing, like, just being kind of affirmative with your moves, like, mm-hmm. doing stuff like you know you can do and just doing that.
When you had the and one in the Virginia Tech game, did you see Kobe's celebration?
I did after the game. It was pretty exciting because I saw his that was similar to the celebration when Leaky had a dunk in the Gonzaga game. I feel like that's the kind of person he is, real energetic.
What was he doing?
Jumping up and down. You know, I saw what he did. He was kicking his legs in the air. I kicked my leg like once. I feel like I can't match that what he did.
Don't want to injure myself here on the celebration part of things.
I couldn't do that.
Okay, you, at least in my opinion, like, on the court in particular, like, I can normally kind of tell how you're feeling, just, like, your face. You have such an expressive, like, feel like if you're mad about something, you look like you're mad. If you're feeling good about it, you look like you're feeling good about it. Have you noticed that about yourself?
Yeah, so one of the things, like, my mom always told me is, like, control what you say. But, like, the biggest thing, like, she's never been able to, like, control facial expressions. Like, neither have I. So, I mean, it's just, it all comes out eventually.
Do you ever get somebody going, Garrison, I saw you look so sad or you look so mad, dude. Does anybody, what's going on?
So, when Kenny, like, tries to talk to me sometimes, he said, I look really sad sometimes. I mean, then, like, one time he saw me, like, really angry for the first time. So, that was probably the biggest thing. Like, he sees it all the time, like, more than anyone else does.
Tell us about growing up in Lafayette.
Lafayette, Alabama is a
– Whoa, hold on. Wait.
You said Lafayette, but it's like Lafayette.
It's Lafette. Yeah. I heard somebody say that the other day, and I thought they said it wrong.
No, sir.
It's Lafette.
Well, look, I've been doing it wrong on the starting lineups now for a year plus, and now starting next game, I got it right finally. That'll be good.
It's fine. But, like, I mean, a lot of people don't say it correctly, but, I mean, it's like – it's just weird because we leave out, like, a lot of letters. It's like Lafette.
These letters aren't important.
it's like, totally different from Lafayette, Louisiana. It's like Lafette, Alabama.
Okay.
But, I mean, like, Lafette is, like, a really small town, like – I mean, pretty much everyone knows each other. I mean, it's not much going on there, for sure. I mean, it's just like a well-knit community.
How many people live in Lafette?
If you made me guess, I would say 3,000, maybe.
Smaller than Chapel Hill, for sure.
It's very small, yeah.
So how did someone from Lafette, Alabama, make his way here to Chapel Hill to be playing basketball?
I wish I could tell you, but, I mean, I have no idea. I mean, it's God's grace. That's why I give it to him. But I mean, it's a blessing. I mean, I couldn't tell you how a small town kid like me has adjusted to being here. So,
when did you realize that you were better at basketball than these other kids on the playground?
I mean, so essentially, I realized that in like really late, like 10th grade.
Wow.
In 9th grade, like, I feel like I wasn't that good. Like I had an okay season. I mean, like, one of the seniors was really hard on me. I mean, like, one of the other seniors grew to be, like, one of my best friends. So, I mean, I just wasn't, like, very comfortable. I was like, man, this might be for me. So, I kind of gave up football that year. But in 10th grade, I started to actually play again. But, I mean, I ended up quitting because, like, my high school coach gave me a lot of confidence.
What was it about? What was it about the next couple of years? Like, how did you see yourself getting better there over the next couple of seasons leading up to? I know you originally committed to Mississippi State and then changed your commitment and coming to Carolina.
So, I mean, one of the biggest things was just like my high school coaches, like Chris Brad and Frank Talbert. So I would credit that to them because they believed in me. I mean, that was like the biggest thing for me, like having someone believe in you. And they just like they convinced me like I could be a really good player, and then I convinced myself like my 10th grade year, and then my 11th grade year, I thought I was a good player. I thought I had like flaws in my game, but I feel like they helped me a lot.
All right, if this is too personal, we can take it out later, so don't worry about it.
Yes,
you originally committed to Mississippi State, elected to change your mind, come to Carolina. Just take us through kind of that all that situation, if you don't mind, if it's not too personal.
It's fine,
what happened?
It's all good, man. It's just leading up to my signing day, it was basically Mississippi State, UNC, and then, like, Georgia. I mean, like, those are the three schools I had the best relationship with. They had been recruiting me for the longest, except for, like, Carolina. I mean, I feel like Carolina started recruiting me, and I feel like that was a – like, it didn't matter when they started. I mean, they wanted me. I mean, but it's a great – it was, like, a really long process. So, essentially, like, my decision was based off, like, kind of emotional because, like – my mom and dad had got divorced when I was like really young. Mm-hmm. And like one of the biggest things I wanted in my life was like my dad to always be around. So I mean that's essentially what I was like choosing. I was like, man, I want to be around him, like, cause nobody else would. I want to say nobody else was like around me as a father figure, but like my stepdad stepped in like when I was in middle school. But I had always wanted to be around my dad, like no matter what.
Sure.
And I feel like this was the one chance. Like I was gonna be around him every day. Like, see him all the time. So, I feel like that was my one chance to, like, kind of get some time back.
And then when you elected to change it over to Carolina, what prompted that for you?
Just basically a better situation. I mean, I feel like with Mississippi State's a really good program right now. I feel like it doesn't equal what Carolina, like, is right now. I mean, it's just a better opportunity to be a basketball player and just get a new scene, basically, because the scene in Chapel Hill is very different from the scene in Mississippi and Alabama.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've been to Starkville before. We know.
Speaking of that, when we had Sterling on.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Sterling kind of threw you under the bus a little bit here, Garrison.
Sterling did throw you a little under the bus. Sterling said that when he first met you, he could not understand what you were saying.
Nobody could.
Really?
Nobody could. I'm not going to lie. Nobody could understand. But, like,
I've been able to.
It's been like a. It's gotten so much better because I used to really drag my words, like really use slang, like people could never understand. But I mean, like, it's gotten a lot better since I first got here.
What's something people would say in Lafette that would make total sense to you and I would have no idea what they're talking about?
I mean, I'm finna go to the store. I'm finna go to the store and give me something to drink real quick with some. I mean, I don't really know.
You're going to go to the store very quickly, and you're going to get a beverage.
I'm finna go to the store and get me a drink real quick. I mean, that's something like I can think of off the top of my head. But my cousin always talk. Like, whenever my cousin talks to me, he's like, man, y'all ain't talking about nothing.
Okay, now that one was a little harder to follow.
He's like, you ain't talking about nothing, man. Go on about your business. So, like, whenever he say that, man, like, you're not really talking about anything. Like, just go ahead, like, change the conversation. Like, just leave me alone.
When you go home, like, at Christmas or something, how long does it take you to slide back into Lafette?
Man, like, 30 minutes.
It's like riding a bike. You're right back on there, baby.
It really don't take that long. So, I mean, like, I can, like, if I call my cousin, like, I call my uncle, like, I understand, like, what they're saying regardless. I mean, it's cool. Like, I mean, I can adjust very well to both.
Okay, so you are being asked a lot of nights to guard guys who are just bigger than you are, just because, I mean, guys like even Blackshear the other night against Virginia Tech, just a bigger guy. What are some challenges for you maybe playing a little bit out of position and trying to go against some guys who are bigger than you are?
I mean, it's just – it's tough at sometimes. I won't lie. Like, when Blackshear was really tough to guard, I want to say, like, Reed Travis was really tough to guard. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, but everybody saw that.
Sure.
But, I mean, it's just, like, bigger, stronger guys. I mean, like, you got to kind of figure out, like, another way to stop them because, like, strength, I'm not going to win. I'm not going to win too many battles with strength. Like, hopefully I win them with my feet, like, positioning, like, just playing, like, ahead of the ball, basically, like, playing before the ball gets to them. Like, that's probably the biggest thing.
Strength-wise, you even mentioned, I think, when you were talking about freshman year, Garrison Brooks, like, oh, he's a little bit weak. Do you feel like you're stronger now? And I mean, obviously, that's a process.
For sure, I feel way stronger.
What would Jonas say if we had him in here now?
Jonas would say I've gotten stronger. He feel like I can get a a lot more stronger next year also. I mean, that's fine because, I mean, I feel like you have to get better with every year. But, I mean, the difference between, like, between me last year and me now is, like, huge.
Did you get a really big tattoo this offseason? Do I remember
that? Yeah, man, it's on my back.
Okay, what prompted the giant tattoo?
I mean, like, one of the biggest things, like, my cousin, like, Devontae, he got, like, a bunch of tattoos. I mean, like, I always, like, I wanted to get, like, a tattoo on my chest at first. And, like, my mom was like, all right, whatever. Now, I asked her one day, and she wasn't going for it.
As soon as it became a little more real,
so,
she wasn't.
As soon as it became a little bit more real, like, she was upset. But, I mean, the biggest thing, like, I saw, like, Odell, he started, like, I want to say, like, the black activist on his leg. Like, that was the kind of thing. I was like, man, I like that. I, like, looked up. I had bought a picture for my room. It was, like, Muhammad Ali in 1964. It was a fight in Miami. And he won. Like, I really liked the picture. I was like, man, I'm going to go get that on my back. Like,
nice.
People looked at me like I was crazy, like, before I did it. So, I mean, I was like, man, I'm going to do it. But then, like, Sterling. No, I got the tattoo on top of my back. But then, like, people like, you really not going to do it. So, I mean, like, Sterling, Brandon, and Seth thought I wasn't going to do it. So, I had to. So, I was like, man, like, I'm going to show you better than I can tell you.
Yeah, it was go time at that point.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to surprise you, Garrison. I don't have any tattoos.
Yeah.
Give me the pain level of getting the tattoo.
Scale 1 to 10, I'm going to go 13. Yeah. It's crazy. It's the first one was so crazy. But, I mean, I got, like, the stage across my back. It hurt so bad. Like, I figured, like, once I had drove, like, I was like, man, like, I might change my mind. Like, once I had gotten the chair, like, he started, like he got it out. Like, he started sketching on my back. I was like, man, like, you here now? Like, you can't turn back.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, like, once he started, I was like, man, I can't stop now. So
yeah, you can't go halfway on a tattoo.
Well, because it says stay G, but, like, I would be afraid that he'd do the S, and I'd be like, I might just go with S.
Yeah. I mean, it was – at that point in time, like, that wasn't even, like, the worst. Like, that was okay. Like, the A and the Y, like, connect over my spine a little bit. And I would say, like, man, that hurts.
I mean,
like,
just
that's the worst. Like, that was the worst part of it. Like, at that point in time, I was like, man, like, can we take a break? Like, I remember the exact pain. I remember everything about it.
I just on your face, right? I mean, yeah. You're like reliving it right now. Yeah.
It was like, I don't regret it, but, like, man, it was so bad.
Yeah.
Jen Townsend told me that she believes your preferred nickname to be Gary.
100% no. 100% no.
Because you get something. Called a lot of things. She calls you Gary. A lot of people call you G. What is your preferred nickname?
So
if we're going to yell at you from the stands, what should we yell?
G. Yeah, G. Like, a lot of people say G, Garo. I don't know where she came up with Gary by herself. And then Kobe came up with this name, Gerbil. Like, so I don't know where he got that from. So then, like, Cam, Kenny. And, like, Sterling heard my real nickname as a child. And then, like, they haven't said anything about it too much, but, like, they know my childhood nickname now.
Well, are you going to tell us, Garrison, or no?
So, Mr. Pickle. So, Mr. Pickle. So, I mean, that's a childhood my nana gave me. So, I mean, I grew up with that.
Hey, that's all right. Was there a reason for that or just
I have no idea. I might call her tonight and find out.
Get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, because I can never find out.
I still think that's better than Gerbil.
Yeah, Gerbil. I don't know. Like, he came up with that, like, one day in the locker room by himself. Like, Kobe's terrible.
So when you're not school, basketball, what kind of stuff do you like to do?
I love movies. So, like, I'm a huge Denzel fan. So, like, American Gangster, Training Day, Man on Fire, Book of Eli, like, those are my movies. So, I mean, like, watching movies, I mean, I'm a huge SpongeBob fan. So, I mean, like,
nice.
I watch a lot of movies and SpongeBob, that's about it.
Training Day, Leaky gave us Training Day as one of the ones that he liked too.
Telling you, me, like, Training Day, one of the greatest movies of all time. Like, me and Walker became, like, some of the best friends because of, like, talking about Denzel movies.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, because Walker does a Denzel impression from Training Day.
Yep.
How accurate do you feel that is?
Scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give him an 8.5.
That's pretty good.
That's how accurate I think Walker is.
Do you have one that's better than him?
I do not.
So he's the best as far as we know.
He's the best. I give it to him.
Not what you'd expect.
No. So who do you do you and Sterling live together? Do I know
that's me and Sterling. Yep.
Okay. What Sadly. Is give us some dirt on Sterling as a roommate?
Sterling's a terrible roommate. Like, loves, like, when we first got here, like, I promise you, every night Sterling ordered the pizzas. I used to, you know what?
That explains a lot.
Yeah, we believe it.
I promise you, like, the first time for Sterling got here, like, all he ate was, like, pizza. Like, I'm not, like, a huge pizza guy, but, like, I'm like, okay, I'll have one there.
Sure.
And then,
there's some pizza around. You're going to, like, grab a slice.
I'm going to grab a slice.
Yeah.
But, like, I promise you, like, he tried every pizza place in Chapel Hill. It was, like, it's no doubt.
Do you guys – I would think – going through just kind of similar stuff, coming in together, both playing down in the post. Has that been beneficial for you to have somebody who's kind of going through something similar to what you're going through?
I consider ourselves brothers of the same struggle at some point in time. Like, I mean, we go through the same stuff. I mean, we could talk to each other about it. I mean, that was probably the best thing. Like, having somebody you can always talk to and, like, see go through the same stuff.
Sure.
It was kind of relieving. Like, man, like, I'm going through it too. Like, we're going to get over it one day.
After the Gonzaga game, you gave one of the best interviews any player's given in the last couple of years, talking about the stuff that had been going on campus and kind of how you had found out about it and how you had learned more. Can you kind of take us through how this kid from Lafayette, not from Lafayette, kind of found out about some of the history on campus and how you educated yourself about that?
So, I mean, it was basically like one of my classmates came up to me talking about it. She was like, she's like, have you seen this petition, like, for against silence? I was like, nah, I haven't, but, like, I kind of know a little bit about it because I did a project on it last year. So she was like, do you know anything about it? I was like, yeah, I gave her a couple facts. And she was like, oh, well, like, well, if you agree with it, then, like, if you agree, like, it should be taken out of campus, like, you should sign the petition. I was like, I mean, like, I'm running by my coaches, and then, like, I see how they feel about it. They didn't mind. So I was like, okay, like, let me see how my team feels about it, like. Because, I mean, like, I wasn't going to be the only person, like, looked at. So it was like, let me take in their opinion in consideration. So that's what I did. I saw what they thought, and then, like, it was like, it's fine with us. Like, do what you believe. So, I mean, I just signed a petition from there, kept doing a little research. I mean.
Is it scary to kind of take a step like that? Because some people are going to fully agree with you, and some people are going to fully disagree with you.
I was a little scared. I mean, at some point in time, people going to be like they told LeBron, like, shut up and dribble. But, I mean, like, I wasn't worried about anybody saying anything like that. But, I mean, like, I just know, like, at some point in time, like, you have to pick a side, like, what you believe in. Like, that's what I believed in, so I'm going to just stand by that.
Sure.
When you went to the coaches, what did they say to you?
So I texted Deshaun. I guess Sean, like, I just texted Sean. He was like, let me run it by coach. And then, like, coach said, like, that's fine, like, if you believe in that, like, you agree with it, just, like, if you sign, before you sign it, like, know what you're talking about. Like, just, I don't want anybody to make you look like a fool, essentially. But, I mean, that's what he told me. Like, he agreed with it. I mean, like, he agreed with me signing. I want to say he agreed with taking, like, that stand on
sure.
it.
Sure. What, okay, so we talked to Sterling a couple weeks ago, and he said that his guy was Coach Rob, that everybody has a guy on the staff who, hey, if things are tough, you know, maybe this isn't something you would go talk to Coach Williams about, but maybe you have a guy. Who's your guy?
My guy. So, I really talk to Sean a lot now. I mean, Coach Davis is always my guy. Like, he's been my guy since day one. I mean, like, that's the guy that convinced me to come here the second time. I mean, like, that's my guy. I would say it's Sean. I would say it's Coach Davis and Sean, but, like, it's really close. Those are my guys.
So what is it about each one of those guys that makes you comfortable talking to them about maybe some other stuff that you wouldn't talk to others
about? I mean, just being open. Essentially, like, just being open ears. Like, you can give me an opinion on anything that I need. So that's probably the biggest thing.
From a player's perspective, how do you maintain this relationship with Coach Williams? Like, everybody sees him on the sideline. He looks all mad, and he's like trying to rip his jacket in half and stuff. What do you guys see on a daily basis that maybe is not the same as what everyone else sees?
I mean, I see a man that's, like, hardworking. I see a really good man, like, a family man that cares for us. So, I mean, like, he cares for us, like, not only for basketball, like, school here. Ask, like, how your family's doing. Like, you try to have a conversation with him. I mean, I believe that he, like, cares for us.
All right, last thing, Garrison, got so a couple games now into conference play. Obviously still a long way to go, a lot of big games still to go. Kind of what is your thought on what needs to continue to improve? How can you guys be the best that you can be as you move through the next couple of weeks?
I feel like the best thing we could do is get better every day and just raise our level every game. So essentially, like, as we get, as Coach Rob told me, he was like, later on in the season, as you get later in the season, like the games get bigger and you have to step up another level. So essentially, I hope we just keep riding to another level, keep going. So that's probably the biggest thing, just getting better every day, attention to detail, and just doing what the coaches say.
Jen's lied. That wasn't the last thing. What's the next step for Garrison Brooks? Because we've talked on here before. You're just a sophomore, but you've played so much. I think people feel like you've been around a long time, but there's a lot more in there. What would you like to add to Garrison Brooks's game?
I mean, I was just a better overall player. Just better. Like, I know it's hard, but like better defensively. Just doing what the coaches like tell me to do, and just I mean, kind of like being a leader. Because I mean, like, we're going to have, like, three seniors next year. I mean, like, maybe I could help them a little bit. So that's probably the biggest thing. And then, I'll just probably be listening to, like, Sean. So, like, Sean's, like, one of the biggest helps for me. So that's why I kind of just, like, stay by his side, like, listen to him all the time.
You weren't having a lot of success with that hook shot earlier in the year, but you kept shooting it.
Yeah.
And it's been going in the last couple weeks. What have you been doing differently? Surprisingly, I have never posted anyone up,
yeah.
So I don't know how to shoot a hook shot. What have you been doing differently that's enabled you to have a little more success?
I mean, just a little bit more work after practice. I mean, just kind of like Sean helps me a lot. Like, Sean helps me, you know, a lot more than people, like, would ever realize. So I think just, like, listening to him, like, teach me how to shoot it, like, how high it needs to get, how soft it needs to get, like, the position, like, all that stuff. So it's probably, like, he just told me, like, keep shooting, like, it'll fall, like, and he was like, just keep working at it.
Again, I hope you got a chance to maybe just get to know Garrison Brooks a little bit more there. Again, a quieter guy. We talked about this earlier in the week. At least we kind of thought he was. But once we got rolling, Adam, just a fun guy. And something you said in that interview, there's two things I want to bring up out of the interview. First, well, let me say this first. I thought his answer about him originally committing to Mississippi State was one of the most personal answers we've ever received on the podcast. In that, anybody can relate to what he was saying. I mean, you and I both grew up with our dads there all the time, and we were very lucky. Some people don't have that luxury. But I think everybody can understand that feeling of, I did this because I wanted to be – I didn't really – know my dad very well, and I wanted to be closer to him. I mean, I just thought that was as personal and raw an answer as I could ever remember.
So much effort goes into figuring out recruiting decisions and who's going to commit to where. And, well, that seems like they favorited this tweet, or they know this guy who plays on this other team and they're friends. A lot of times it's something like that you don't know anything about. And you can sit there and go, that doesn't make any sense that he would choose Mississippi State. If it doesn't make any sense, there's probably something you don't know.
The other part of that is, or the other thing I want to bring up, it feels like Garrison Brooks is an older player than he is. And you said that just because he's played a lot. And he's still such, in a relative term, so young in his development. And I think you've seen some clear growth from last year to this year in his game and his effectiveness and how he handles himself on the court. And so to think that he's not even halfway through, if he's a four-year college guy, if he's not even halfway through those 4 years, that's pretty exciting to think about, that he can continue to make that kind of growth.
Well, we talked about Brandon Robinson before the interview. Brandon Robinson's a junior, and you feel like his kind of curve has just now sped up. Garrison Brooks a whole year behind that. But he's had to play so much more. He's had to. And he's had to go against guys who he knows are stronger and more skilled than him on that day. A lot. Probably the majority of the time he was out there.
Yeah.
That's kind of a daunting thing. That, like, if I tell you, Jones, we're going to hire Bob Costas as the new play-by-play guy, and y'all are going to do the exact same games. Just do your best. That's probably a little intimidating.
Coming for you, Costas.
So I think that's impressive, and I totally agree with what you said about kind of the interview as a whole. It doesn't seem like Garrison Brooks is trying to be anything other than he's not.
I agree with that. He is just who he is.
He's Garrison Brooks.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, that's okay. He's going to be the same guy.
Yep.
And if you like him, that's fine too. He's good with that. But I just thought that not just from a basketball perspective, but from kind of an overall perspective, I thought it was really fun to sit down with somebody who seems so comfortable with – with who they are and what they are, and happy to talk to you about it.
Yep. Okay. Before Adam gets to his list, which, as we know, is brought to you by our friends at Top of the Hill, and we have Roy Williams Live coming up Monday night. We've had a couple funky Roy Williams Lives the last few weeks. Hubert Davis was with us 2 weeks ago. This past week, it was just the kind of half the show was live. And then if you were listening to the show, the back half or the back third or so was Adam and my interview with Nasir Little from the podcast, because Coach had to go and kept meet the team to get down to Atlanta. So we are back full hour live. Anticipate Coach being there on Monday night this upcoming week. So looking forward to that. Hope you can join us. And let me say, I've said it a couple times, we have had enormous crowds this year. I really do think just consistently the biggest crowds we've ever had. And we've never had bad crowds for a Coach Williams show or any show. But I feel like we have more people coming to that show than we ever have before, and we appreciate it because it makes a difference. It just makes it more fun when there's a lot of people there. And so thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Looking forward to being back at Topo on Monday. Also brought to you by our friends at Pinehurst. Pinehurst number 4 opened in September to rave reviews. Forbes magazine calls it the newest must-play in the country. Be among the first to play at Pinehurst.com. And UNC Healthcare, brought to you by UNC Healthcare. My UNC Chart, keep track of your stats with My UNC Chart. Visit MyUNCChart.org to sign up. Here's a little funky stat, Adam. Tar Heels and Louisville playing coming up on Saturday. Each team won for the first time in the other team's gym the last time they played. Louisville had never won in Chapel Hill before its win earlier this year. Carolina had never won in Louisville against Louisville until last time they were there. So, a little interesting nugget there for you, Adam.
That's a good fact.
Okay, you told us you have a list, and I know you wouldn't lie to us, Adam.
Nope.
So let's get to it.
Okay.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Okay, let's see what we've got on the list today. A lot of things happened in Atlanta, as they often do, because that's where the players play.
I kind of felt like it was a, it was like an excellent adventure kind of day.
Yeah, it really was.
We just did a bunch of different fun things. I don't know if you've ever seen. Have you ever seen the show Parks and Rec, the TV show?
No.
Okay. There's this one episode where there's a wedding coming up, and so there's a bachelor party, like all the guys are doing a bachelor party and all the girls are doing a bachelorette party. And so kind of the leading up to it was, oh, the girls have everything all planned out and it's going to be awesome, but theirs like falls apart and is no good, and the guys had no plan and didn't really know what to do, and theirs turned out to be awesome. Like they ended up throwing football with the Indianapolis Colts and the – and whatever their stadium's called, you know, all that stuff. So, I mean, just I felt like that was our day. Like, we really didn't have a plan on what was going to happen, but we just ended up having an awesome day.
Yeah. Well, and
yeah, and let's admit, it was you, me, Ben Alexander, our chief network engineer, was there with us for about half the time, and Big Grits.
Well, and some of the adventures and hijinks you'll hear on future pods.
Yeah.
Some really good interviews already in the can.
Yeah.
But then some of it you won't hear on the pod, and that's
until right now.
Right, until this moment. Usually the parts involving Big Grits. Of course, if you follow us on the gram, you've already seen some shots of Big Grits doing some crazy Big Grits thing. We tried to get him to hijack one of those little scooters.
There are a lot of scooters around Atlanta.
Be forewarned, if you try to do so without paying, an alarm will sound.
Yeah.
Is what I heard.
We thought Eric may have to go to the pokey.
Yeah. We took Eric to the varsity.
Yes, we did.
What do you have?
They love Eric at the varsity. They were blown away by Eric there.
It was
almost like we were traveling with Bigfoot or something.
Yeah, or like we had like a Siberian tiger in a cage, and we like rolled it into the middle of the varsity, and everyone stopped what they were doing.
Please look at our tiger.
Well, first of all, it was the least crowded I've ever seen the varsity, because it was like 3:30 in the afternoon, so kind of an odd time.
Yeah, we nailed the tiger.
Also, there was incredibly extreme winter weather, snow and ice everywhere. We could barely move. Classes were canceled throughout the Atlanta area and at Georgia Tech.
That part's true.
And it was sunny and 40.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really think Atlanta has become extra cautious about any potential winter weather because of what happened when we were there. You and I were there with the Tar Heels 5 years ago, where it really was, and I mean, it's happened here before too, where there wasn't much snow, but it was this ice, and it just absolutely ground the city to a halt.
And the time of day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was in like mid-afternoon.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it was, and again, it happened here before too, back in 2005, where there were cars like stranded on the road, people sleeping in buses. I mean, it just, like, there was, you couldn't move. And so I understand why they are so cautious. But all the kind of talk about before we, and the second part of that is, of course, the Super Bowl's there. And so I think they're just, they being kind of the city of Atlanta and all the people who make decisions for the city. And remember, the mayor got killed when that happened. Not literally, but like PR-wise, just got crushed about how poorly the city had handled it previously. And so now I think the new mayor and the people in charge there are extra cautious. And with the big event there, they wanted to err on that side. But all the talk kind of from the weather was, oh, boy, we don't even know if this is a serious situation. Who knows what's going to happen? Nobody do anything but stay at your house. No way you can even get in or out of this metropolis this day. And it really rained a little bit in the morning, was chilly, and then by the afternoon was sunny. Cold, but sunny.
Which is exactly what the forecast said it was going to do. That's the part that we talked about kind of beforehand. Like, you'd read the stories and you think, oh, this sounds terrible. Let me Google the 5-day Atlanta forecast. And then you go to the forecast and it's a Tuesday, 38, partly cloudy in the morning, sunny in the afternoon.
Yeah.
We took Eric to the Varsity.
Yes. Sorry, we got derailed there.
And there were probably, if you've ever been in the Varsity, you know, there's just a line of a dozen or more cash registers where you place your order. And there was someone at every single one of those registers just waiting for customers.
Yeah.
And in comes Eric. They were impressed by Eric.
Yeah.
Several things. One, they did not believe he was only 7 feet tall.
No, I thought he was taller than that.
That's the first thing everyone asks him is, how tall are you?
Yeah.
98% of the time, those are the first words someone speaks to Eric. And he very nicely and politely said 7 feet, to which their response was, no!
Yeah.
This one lady absolutely convinced he was 7'5".
7'5".
And she was taking that to the grave.
Yeah.
He is 7'5".
Yeah, she's telling people right now that like this 7'5" George Murison guy walked into the Varsity.
Well, and like he would say 7 feet and she'd go 7'5". And he'd go 7 feet and she'd go 7'5". Like, as though he didn't know or she didn't believe him.
Now, this was the actual conversation. Yes.
Yeah. And so, then I go up to the register to place my order for a block of chocolate ice.
Yeah, you got the bad machine. You and Eric both. Eric and I got the frozen orange.
Yeah.
You got the chocolate milkshake. But I got mine from a different machine than you guys did. And yours were both like frozen solid and mine was delicious. I'm kind of thinking about it right now, how good it was.
Yeah, the lady, when she gave me mine, gave me a straw. And like it was mostly useful as a chisel.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, not as good as a cookout shake, clearly.
Come on now.
But I had to do something. So I had this interaction with the nice lady who was taking my order. She, of course, was still talking about Eric because he was a couple registers down. And she goes, what kind of car does he ride in? And I was like, well, ma'am, we parked outside in a fine minivan.
Yep.
And she goes, oh, as though this made perfect sense. Oh, he lay down in the back. As though we were like riding around Atlanta with 7'5" Eric laid out on the back
lounging
seat.
In the back.
Eric, where you want to go to the Varsity?
Find the finest coffee in Atlanta. That was after the Varsity.
And so I told her that indeed, no, he had been sitting in the passenger seat. And she believed that about as much as she believed he's only 7 feet tall.
You like, don't put that 7'5" beast of a handsome man in the passenger seat.
So Atlanta never been one of my favorite road trips, but I got to say, Tuesday was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And yeah, we did. We found the top-rated coffee place in Atlanta.
I wouldn't rate that number one.
Nah, it was not number one to me. It's not number one in my book, Adam.
No.
Just you take that to the bank.
Well, and I don't drink coffee, so I'm the worst person to ask. But my wife does.
And I do.
Yeah. And so I go to a lot of coffee shops for both those reasons. I've been to better.
Yeah, me too.
I can't speak to the flavor of the beans or anything like that.
It was super average.
You know why it was rated highly, though? Because it was like in the art museum or like nearby.
Hip. Yeah.
So it was highbrow.
Yeah, it's real hip.
Yeah. We got to see the original Quick Change.
We did. And I have to say they were on their game.
Yes.
The Georgia Tech crowd ate it up.
Yep.
There's such a difference between OG Quick Change and the fake Quick Changes.
Yeah.
But there was a magical moment during the Quick Change, Adam. And that is during the song.
Same music every time.
Yeah. There's this part where it goes, cha-cha-cha. Right? Is that right?
Ay-ay-ay.
Ay-ay-ay. That's what it is. Sorry. Excuse me. Not cha-cha-cha.
See, you're not ready to be OG Quick Change just yet.
It's ay-ay-ay.
Yeah.
And it was this unbelievable moment. So Adam and I are sitting courtside. It's halftime. And as everyone is, we're enthralled with Quick Change. And so the part of the song comes where it's ay-ay-ay. And Quick Change Guy Quick Change, like locks eyes with Adam and me. Like he just happened, like it just happens to happen where he's looking right at us and we're looking right at him.
Yeah.
And everything else in McCamish Pavilion doesn't matter at that point in time, Adam. And he looks right at us and goes, ay-ay-ay. Whew, what a moment.
We've got to find out if they're coming to the Smithsonian.
Adam was so excited. He was like, do you think we should get a picture with Quick Change?
We should.
I know. I was like, well, I got to do this and do this.
Work.
Yeah.
Work, schmirk. If they're coming to the Smith Center the rest of this season, we're having them on the pod.
Big words,
Adam. I'll say it right now. And I don't even know if they speak English other than aye, aye, aye.
Yeah, we know they say aye, aye, aye.
We're going to make that happen. I'm going to send some emails is what I'm going to do. We don't want that fake Quick Change. Here's the other thing about Atlanta that I think is underrated. But we should have known, because if you look at the stats, and trust me, I do.
Yeah.
Atlanta's the third biggest city for the pod.
Mm.
Third biggest in all this great Mother Earth.
Yeah, all across
number three.
This fine land of ours.
There's a lot of Tar Heels in Atlanta.
Really? Well, do you think there were more Tar Heel fans than Georgia Tech fans?
Probably, yes.
It was close if it wasn't.
Well, and if you take out the students, forget it. It's a demolition.
And I think if you happen to be listening on the radio, you'd probably go, well, that doesn't sound right. It was loud in there. But we were right in front of the students.
Right.
And so kind of what we experienced or what you may have experienced, again, if you were listening, if you happen to be listening on the radio for this game, that was not the atmosphere in the arena in total.
We got to meet a ton of very nice people.
Yes.
We got to take a lot of arms crossed photos.
Yeah.
We met Carolina James's sister, and she verified the turtlenecks.
Yeah.
And so that is true. Also, we took a picture with Big Grits, arms crossed style, with Carolina James's sister. Have you really looked at that picture?
No. Yeah.
It looks like a promo for our album dropping in like mid-February.
Nice.
Like, here, the hit single, Arms Crossed Serious Face, from this group here. Because, like, we're all kind of at different depths in the frame.
So, basically, we nailed it. Which I got to tell you, Adam, I think it was my best serious face day of the year.
Well, and I wanted to bring that up because you've gotten a lot of praise for your serious face.
Brandon Robinson and I are just, we're working on our games, and we're rounding into form.
Chris Williams, Lindsay, no last name needed, praised you for your serious face on Tuesday night.
Thank you.
And I thought Ed Page, he really got me thinking with his comment. Because he said, Adam looks tough. Jones looks very disappointed in you coming home after curfew.
Yeah.
I think I've put my finger on why you're having trouble with this.
Okay.
I have teenagers in my house.
Right.
Your kids are younger.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with teenagers is you have to believably convey the message that you might turn them into the police.
Like, hey, I don't want to do this, but it's going to have to happen.
I will. Yeah. I will take you to the police station right now. Not I'm threatening you, but like you're getting in the car and we're going.
Right.
With younger kids, they still love you. And so you need them to know that you still love them and you're on their side and you're going to instill some discipline, but at the end of the day, you love them.
Right.
I think when your kids get to be teenagers, I think your serious face is going to improve.
Oh, okay.
That's what I think.
A few more years to go.
Just something to keep an eye on. Also, that'll be chapter one in my parenting book. Believe it. Because teenagers are they're like bears. They can smell fear.
Yeah.
So if they even sense that you might not take them to the police station,
yeah,
they're going to take advantage of you.
They sense your weakness.
Yeah. The Michael Jordan versus Vince Carter dunk debate.
Yeah.
First of all, Vince Carter won in an overwhelming majority.
Yeah.
Last time I checked.
Let me go. Let me see if I can get the final totals here. So I sent it out on my Twitter feed and just said, hey, can you maybe help us out with this vote? Who would in prime dunk contest Michael Jordan against Vince Carter? Nearly 2,000 votes came in, and Vince Carter had 78% of the vote.
That's fine. All that is fuel for Michael Jordan when this contest happens.
Well, and there were a lot of very strong opinions.
There really were.
And I think there were a lot of very valid opinions on this, too. I think some of it is what you brought up of Michael Jordan, just the competitive level of, you know, he's just going to do whatever it takes to win. Some of it was, I do agree with several people who said he was so different when he came and did. And I don't know if he necessarily was different, because there were obviously guys who, you know, Dr. J and others who could dunk before Michael Jordan came along. But it also was the NBA was getting very popular, and he was, I mean, it was right place, right time. He could do these things. So I think that was some of it. A lot of people, and this is a good point, kind of talked about how smooth he was, like almost the smoothness of his athleticism, and how he almost looked like he was gliding in the air, which is totally true. Whereas Vince Carter, I do think, maybe had a little more of that explosiveness, and he also came along where the creativity part of it was much more important. And so all valid points, but I'll still take Vince.
The highlight of that discussion was director of Pond Security, Rusty Cotterman, sent in a GIF of the Kenny Smith dunk.
Yeah.
Bouncing it between his legs, off the backboard, caught it, reverse dunk. I just watched it on loop for like an hour and a half. What an incredible, probably, I think we can all safely say, best dunk of all time.
It, when you saw it, I was like, this wasn't quite as sweet as I remember it being. And that's nothing against the Jet, who's awesome, obviously.
Creighton wore their blue uniforms on
People
Wednesday night.
People are upset about this.
And they got stomped by the aforementioned St. John's. 81-66, the Johnnies take it. Creighton's now 12-9 overall, 3-5 in whatever conference they're in.
I got to tell you, I saw about 10 seconds of that game. And when I flipped over, it happened to be the back of a jersey of a Creighton player. It really does. It's really way too close to the Tar Heels.
Well, I hope they enjoyed their 15-point loss. I had something else. If I ever read these in order, that would really help. Oh, Mike Morgan tweeted at us and said he really enjoyed the Josh Pastner interview on Tuesday. Pastner is one of the happiest opposing coaches to talk to us that there is.
Well, here's something that is absolutely official. Josh Pastner and Adam are boys. They're boys. When nobody's looking, they go and practice playing defense with each other.
Yeah, on the sideline.
Yeah, they practice like being the six man on the floor.
Yeah.
Josh Pastner is very – and I don't know Josh Pastner personally, but in those situations is very likable. He's always very complimentary about – I mean, almost overly complimentary about the Tar Heels. He's just kind of got a way about him that makes you go, I like that guy. Even if he could be reading a menu or something and say, golly gee, I want these big grits right here. And you just like him. And so you certainly hope that he does well. I think it's been a challenge in Atlanta and for him with Georgia Tech, although with Okogie going NBA early that they did not expect.
Yeah, I forgot about him.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be a different team with a legitimate wing scorer and, you know, a top 10 scorer in the league, which is what he would be if he was on that team. So, you hope for him that they get better, but right now it's a little bit of a struggle. Although I will also say, Georgia Tech isn't – I mean, they're not – there's some teams in the league who are 1-7 right now. They're 3-5 and have a win at Syracuse. So, I mean, They may be. They did not look particularly good on Tuesday night. I think the Tar Heels had something to do with that. But I also don't think maybe they're as in as tough a spot as you may think, just if Tuesday was the only time you've seen them all year.
Mike wanted to know if we could rank the best to the worst of the pregame interviews in the league.
Well,
not comfortable doing that.
Yeah, this is that's your call because you're the one who does it now.
Well, and I think we've talked before how some do and some don't.
Right.
And you can probably guess the ones who don't. But some of the favorites of the ones who do, my boy Josh Pastner,
yeah,
obviously.
Your boy.
Tony Bennett's always really good.
So classy.
Mike Bray's always really good.
Yeah.
And one you might not think of, Brad Brownell. He's always really good.
He is pretty good. Tell you another one I've always thought pretty nice is Jim Christian.
And I had him on my middle list because I feel like we don't see him that
much.
Out of the ACC, some highlights, Jay Wright, Tommy Amaker.
Tom Izzo.
Shaka Smart was really good this year. That's the only time I've ever talked to him. And John Beilein.
Yeah.
John Beilein was awesome. So those would be the ones who would stick out to me as they seem like really good guys, in addition to being good coaches, obviously.
Were we able to talk to Mark Few before the championship game?
No, I don't think so.
And
he didn't do it this year.
So that's I'm a little surprised by that.
Me too.
But I remember, I mean, when I was doing the opposing coach interviews, I mean, I talked to Tom Izzo before the championship game in 2009, and I always think that makes it – I mean, they don't ever have to give you an interview, but especially in that kind of – and I mean, I sat down – I told this story before the 16 championship game. Like, we didn't really expect to get Jay Wright. I think we had put in the request, but it didn't really ever happen until all of a sudden it was like 90 minutes before the game, and they're like, hey, you still want that interview with Coach Wright? And so I was the only one there. I said, yeah, I'll go do it, just because if we had the opportunity to do it. And so I sat in this ballroom alone with Jay Wright in what turned out to be, well, it was already a huge game for him. It was the first time that they had a chance to win the championship. Of course, they did. And he gave us a 5-minute interview or something. And so I always respect that and appreciate it when the coaches do that and give good interviews and are pleasant, because we're not trying to get state secrets from them. We're trying to ask them about some very kind of broad main topics about their teams. And when they're pleasant and happily do that, that to me makes a big difference. And I don't think it can do anything. Like you said, Mike was the one who sent the tweet. Mike will probably get, next time he sees Georgia Tech play, go, yeah, I remember, hey, Josh Pastner was pretty, it was nice to Adam when they did that interview.
And that's what's most important to me.
Well, but I mean, it's just something that just one of those small little things that I do think can make a difference PR-wise for someone.
Well, how often is Mike going to have a thought about Josh Pastner other than that?
Right.
He's not going to think about Josh Pastner.
Right.
And people may not know, like, those interviews legitimately happen, like, between 60 and 90 minutes before the game. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember who it was. Oh, Mike Bray. He told me that when Notre Dame was here earlier this year, he said Carolina and Syracuse are the only two radio networks that try to get those interviews with him anymore.
Hmm.
Which, hey, Syracuse, Jim Boeheim hadn't done an interview like that in 20 years. Don't bother asking.
Yeah. Yeah, that always does. And you know, I almost feel bad because, like, Matt Parks, the play-by-play guy at Syracuse, and does a great job and is a nice guy. And I always think that just puts them in a weird position, because if they're going to ask – and they talk to Coach Williams. But on the other side, it's like – I mean, Jim Boeheim ain't going to talk to anybody. It's like Duke just stopped asking because Mike Krzyzewski doesn't talk to anybody. And so it does put those guys in a weird position, which is part of what makes it so easy for us, because Coach Williams is so awesome about it. He will talk to anybody who – not everybody does it, but anybody who asks, he'll – doesn't matter if we're playing – if Carolina's playing Tennessee Tech or if they're playing Duke, he would do the interview. And so that makes it easier for us to ask and get those interviews.
You can always tell which coaches think you've secretly been sent there to discover their game plan,
right,
versus which coaches know, like, you're trying to fill 2 minutes on the radio and get something interesting about the Tar Heels.
Yeah.
Because some coaches absolutely believe you were sent there to try to take a picture of the whiteboard and get all the matchups and all the defenses, and you're running right back to Roy Williams' office, when in reality – like, if I tried to tell Roy Williams something about the fill-in-the-blank game plan, he'd be like, Adam, I know you probably don't know anything about what you're talking about.
Yeah. Thanks, pal.
I'm going to totally ignore you. Also, why are you in my office?
Yeah, please leave now.
Yeah. So, good question from Mike. That's all I've got for the list.
Okay. You have how can you justify that? And you have a vacation from life. But before we do that, let's get to our Roadhouse Challenge. So, we're going to do a Roadhouse Challenge. either Tuesday or one of the two shows next week, we'll have our Roadhouse Challenge review. And we put out a new foursome, but as is the Roadhouse Challenge rules, three of the four have already been on the list previously, and then we added in a new one. So the three holdovers: Tremors, Footloose, Over the Top. I think Tremors is the only one that's been on there since the beginning, right?
I think Over the Top might
maybe
be.
Over the Top. And then we added Bloodsport. Pretty close vote, although the winner pulled away at the end, and that's going to be Footloose. So Adam and I will join Kevin Bacon, and we will watch not the redo with Julianne Hough or whatever. We're doing the real Footloose, the OG Footloose retweet. So we'll be doing that here soon, and we'll either have that on Tuesday or on Friday of next week.
I'm looking forward to that.
I've never seen it. Never seen it. I know it's about dancing, and that's all I know.
I know the music better than I know the movie.
Yeah. So looking forward to bringing that to you on a show next week. All right, Adam, how can you justify that?
I do not have to justify!
How can you justify what you've done? How
can you justify sacrificing our love?
How can you possibly justify that?
This is going to be chapter two in my parenting book. This is not Tar Heel related. This is just something I've noticed as a trend in the world, and I'm trying to put a stop to it here on the pod.
Okay.
I don't think you will have any experience with this for reasons we have aforementioned.
Well, I have a how can you justify that.
Oh, good.
Also, so.
Okay. I am not in favor of the trend of these darn youngsters sitting in the passenger seat of the car wearing their earbuds.
Hmm.
See, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? That's the new cool thing. Like, if I'm taking you somewhere and you're a teen, you put your earbuds in and listen to your music or do whatever you do on your phone. Forget that, for lack of a better word. If I'm going to haul you to wherever you're going and you're going to sit in the passenger seat, you can take your earbuds out and you can have a conversation with me. Now, this is different than if you're going on, like, a long car trip and you're in the back.
Right.
And you're, like, watching a movie or something. I'm okay with that.
Okay. I hear you, Adam. I hear your concerns.
Right?
Adam, you were a teenage youngster once.
And I never had my earbuds in the passenger seat.
But did you enjoy those conversations with your dad when he'd be like, so, how was school today? And you'd be like, fine. What happened? Nothing.
I wouldn't trade them for the world.
Those trips to CVS were my favorite things, were a cherished memory.
How much did you save, Dad? Well, and so that brings me to another point, which is we've been discussing the rap game here lately on the pod.
Yeah, two things, something you and I are experts in.
Yeah, well, I'm about to blow your mind. So our older daughter made me a playlist on Spotify of songs she thought I would need to know. I have now listened to this playlist. And I'm ready to give you my exclusive ranking of the best rhymers in the game.
Oh, okay.
Only those who were on this playlist,
sure, yeah.
Of which was like 10 songs.
Are in your Spotify playlist.
Number one, Juice WRLD. You don't even know who that is, do you?
No.
He's dope, is what he is. The next time we have a player on, I'm going to give them my rankings of the best rhymers in the game and see what they think.
I bet Coby White is on pins and needles for
I bet
that.
He is. Number two. 21 Savage. I like that guy. I like that guy. He's got a little rhythm to him. Now, you know, like, the top two on this list are probably going to retire if they hear that I like them, because that means they're not doing it right.
No, yeah, they're like, burn that podcast. I'm going to lose all my street
Don't
cred.
Tell anyone that guy thought I was good. Number three, Lil Baby.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Leaky. I can't put him number one.
You and Leaky, though.
Yeah. Number four, it's a distant fourth. I just don't like him. I don't like his style. DaBaby.
All right, so Juice WRLD.
Juice WRLD, 21 Savage.
Lil Baby.
Lil Baby.
DaBaby.
DaBaby.
All right.
Juice WRLD and 21 Savage, if they come out on tour, I might be going.
So we were in Atlanta on Tuesday with the Tar Heels, and we were courtside. And as we mentioned earlier, we were right in front of the student section.
Hmm.
As you may expect, the student sections are a little wild. And there are things said in the student section at a college basketball game that you probably wouldn't want your, say, 7-year-old or something to hear.
It's like a DaBaby mixtape.
It can be a little savage in there. And so there was one gentleman standing behind us at our radio location. Now, I have to be honest with you, this is kind of retroactive. How can you justify that for me? Because I didn't hear, you heard.
He was right behind me.
Yeah. I didn't hear what was apparently a very profane one-way discussion that he was having with Pat Driscoll, one of the officials at the game on Tuesday night. To the point that during a timeout, Pat Driscoll came over, and I will give him credit, very kind of calmly said, hey, that's enough. Like, you got a great seat. Enjoy the game. I don't need to hear that stuff anymore. You're going too far. Like, that's enough. Right? I mean, that wasn't exactly word for word, but
almost exactly word for word.
Very calmly just said, hey, dude, you're gone too far. But this did not stop this gentleman from using one particular word as a noun, a verb, an adjective. He would put it with other words. it was just not the right thing to be saying. And again, this happens all over the place, but I do feel like this even maybe was a little bit more than what you normally hear, especially after the official came and said, chill out. And so either the very next time out, I think it was the next time out, Pat Driscoll came over. He found himself a McCamish Pavilion security guard, and that gentleman was escorted out of the game, to which he got one more exclamation in, which I did very clearly hear, towards Pat Driscoll. I am all for fans going to the game, and you have a voice, and if you want to get on the official, that's fine. They understand that, but, like, come on. Let's not use language that is like that to that extreme repeatedly, especially when you've been asked to chill out and been basically told, hey, if this doesn't stop, this isn't going to end the way that you want. So, fine engineer in training, Georgia Tech student, how, sir, can you justify that?
I think it was like University of Maryland level intensity with the verbal language.
With this one guy.
Yeah. And the part I don't get is he was probably as close to Pat Driscoll as I am to you right now. Would I ever say those things to you in normal world land?
Maybe.
You wouldn't do that to someone who you don't know other than they're wearing a striped shirt. So why do you feel it's okay? Remember, this might be an important tidbit. Classes were canceled that day.
Yeah.
A lot of time to get ready for the game. Why do you think it's okay to do that to this person you don't know, whose main offense, as far as I could tell, was potentially messing up a block charge call? And then you proceed to say all these things, including all sorts of things about his background and preferences and just things I don't think this guy really knew. I think he was speculating.
He was shooting from the hip.
Why do you think that's okay?
One funny part of that is friend of the pod, Ken Cleary, was there, and he saw kind of this happening from afar, and when Pat Driscoll came over with the security guard, he thought it was Adam who was getting kicked out of the game, and he was all concerned that Adam was getting kicked out.
Driscoll, I've had enough of you putting the jackets in the bonus.
You, sir, are going on the how can you justify that list, Pat Driscoll.
Nope, you get out of here.
All right, Adam, before we go, you said you had a vacation from life.
I did, and since we've talked bad about the Georgia Tech students, I'm going to talk good about one of them. So we were sitting there.
We didn't talk bad about this. We talked about the one guy. Yeah.
And his raisings and parents and just the fact that he's not a good person. So another Georgia Tech student, a first year from Greensboro, came up to me before the game, and we were kind of in the midst of our crossed arms pictures and promo for future album, and said, hey, I just wanted to say hello. And unfortunately, I didn't catch his name because that guy was yelling words in my ear at the time. But I grew up in Greensboro, and I was a big Tar Heel fan. And I just want to tell you how much I love cheering for the Tar Heels, and I've read your stories since I was little, which, of course, that just made me feel great. But I decided to come here to Georgia Tech. I said, oh, what made you decide on Georgia Tech? And he said, well, I got a full ride. And I said,
that's a pretty good decision.
That's a good choice on your part, Mr. Future Engineer, sir. He said, you know, I'm not – Georgia Tech's my school, but I still love the Heels, so either way, I'm gonna win tonight. And so I just thought that was really cool because he didn't have to come over and say anything. And it's really fun to be able to be part of the way people experience Carolina basketball in some little tiny way. And just that was – don't often get that at visiting arenas. But that was really fun, and enjoyed getting to talk to him. He was like the Josh Pastner of fans.
Sometimes you want to go.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. And they're always glad you came.
You wanna All right, 2 o'clock on Saturday, Carolina and Louisville. We'll be on the air at 1 o'clock for that one. Big game coming up tomorrow. We'll talk about that next week. We have a really cool interview coming up on Tuesday when Adam and I were able to go to Clark Atlanta in Atlanta. That's a D2 school where the head coach is George Lynch, member of the 1993 National Championship team. That in and of itself would have been an awesome interview. But we had Big Grits with us, too. And so we had all four of us, and it's a little bit of a longer interview, almost, close to an hour, the interview itself. And a big part of it is just kind of Eric and George talking about 93 and about Coach Smith and about Carolina basketball. So it's really cool. So that's coming on Tuesday of next week. We're going to have our Roadhouse review of Footloose coming soon. We have some more. We have another interview in the can. Don't know if we're going to use that next week or the week after that. But the whole point of this is we got a lot of good stuff coming. Plus, it's February. ACC basketball in its peak. Quick thank you, Adam, before we get out of here. Not to you, even though I'm pointing at you. Although, just thank you for being you, Adam. We're into February. January was our most downloaded month ever. The previous most downloaded month ever had been November, which was of 18. Which was the last – we didn't have a full month.
We weren't that good in December.
Well, December, we just didn't have our full schedule because of the holidays. Yeah. And so
– good craftsman never blames his tools. That's on us. We weren't good. Sorry about December.
So we just had – and even the month before that, which was October, I think is – if I ranked, I think now it's our fourth most downloaded month. So that means three of our four most downloaded months have come the last 3 months that we've had a full schedule. So just a big thank you for listening, for hanging out with us, for hopefully having a good time. And we look forward to keep podding with you. We got a good month coming up. It's going to be a good month in February. Hopefully the Tar Heels keep playing well. Because when they play well, look good, sound good. Adam, that's what I always say.
That's what 21 Savage told me.
So we're going to let Garrison Brooks and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hey, this is Garrison Brooks. I'll holler at you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.